Look, no big deal, but we just had Jack Green, double Olympian, on the podcast, and you're going to get to listen to it in literally 1 minute. Jack's going to share really actionable tips on how to focus effort in order to reach your results. He also shows us the difference between balance and harmony and getting right in your life. I had loads of notes I was writing down in this whole conversation, and thank you so much for joining us. Cue the intro.
Let me talk you through the two most emotional, stressful months of my sales career.
It's no big deal to call a CTO and tell I want to talk.
You cannot stand on the sideline and basically wait until the dice rolls itself. It's never going to happen.
I don't know if this is going to be on the record or off the record. It's almost like playing with cards, this job. Like, it's like you get given a hand of cards and like you have to do the best with what you have.
Someone might have been watching down on me.
Me and Jack going into this, when he originally told me exactly the same, like, oh, you know, Jack, I've got this idea, you know, what about this? My first thought was, my God, I don't even care if anyone, like, listens to this, you know. If I take one key takeaway from every recording, I'll be such a better rep.
This is No Big Deal, the sales podcast.
This is a world first, no big deal bonus episode, and we are really, really lucky and excited to have Jack Green on. Jack, if you didn't know, is a double Olympian and represented GB in our home nations in London 2012. He's a European medalist. He's a former head of well-being at the BBC, and he's been in SAS for the last 4 years, and I tried to sell to him. He didn't buy. And we're really lucky to have him on this episode of No Big Deal to talk about mindset, especially now as when we record this, the Olympics is on.
Love it. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Hey, thank you. On that part of you not closing the sale, unfortunately, I wasn't the budget holder on that one. So
I think qualified it better.
Yeah, something like that.
Thanks for joining us, Jack. I'm just going to call you Green. Nico, I'm going to call you Nico. I hope everyone's okay with that. Jack, Green, when we were just talking then, we were talking about the race, like the concept of the race, which applies, like, obviously, if you want to apply it to the rest of the world as well, like, you've got to focus on yourself, but you're also in the race. And like, that's becoming, I'm watching the Olympics at the moment, like, feverishly, actually. And noticing it more and more. And it happened last night at 1500 as well. The guy was just like running his own race and then just totally caught up in the back straight. And then just got burned by everyone else because obviously he was trying to move left to right in different lanes, trying to block people off. Someone came up the inside of him that he wasn't aware of. And from the outside, it's really difficult for people who aren't in athletics or aren't racers to recognize that the race is going on and it kind of overwhelms people. But I just wondered from your perspective, what's it like from the inside? How do you handle the race and everyone around you and all the expectations that comes with it and try and focus on what you're doing?
So I think it's a bit of a journey of having to learn how to focus on yourself anyway. So especially when I was a young athlete, it was all about other people and wanting to beat them. And that's a lot of the motivation is like, how do I be better than people? How do you get praise and external recognition and all this stuff? But if you look at like the 1500 last night at the time we're recording this, and there were two guys that it was all about them. And then the person that wins, no one's even talking about. But if you actually look at that field in any Olympic final, everyone is incredible. Like, there's no one there who's a joke. No one's won some big lottery ticket and got, oh, I'm now an Olympic final. So everyone's capable. And what happened in that race is focus was on two people who ended up destroying each other, and then someone else just went, cool, they're not my problem. I'm going to just come through and do what I need to do. And I think we see this a lot, particularly in social media and various other things, of this comparison. Everything's, you know, what have other people got and what are other people doing? And you see a lot of people say, right, you shouldn't compare at all. But I think it's really natural to compare and it can be really healthy. So I talk about it's almost like the go compare effort, right? Don't compare, but be aware. And that's like, I need to know what's happening. I also need to know what's capable. I need to know what I'm up against. I need to know what's around. But once I have that information and knowledge to make me informed, then I'm just going to focus on myself. Because if I don't nail my own job first, it doesn't matter what I know about someone else. Like, that's the extra bit. Once I've sorted myself, I've focused myself, I've executed to the best of my ability, the extra like little marginal gains are, I know what everyone else can do or will do or is capable of doing. But there's no point focusing on the rest of the race if you can't run your own first. And that's a big part I talk about with athletes and obviously people who manage as well. It's like the only way you can control anything is by running your own race. Your actions and your behaviors decide what's going to happen in the future, not hoping and wishing and looking around. It's what you're going to do here and now. So yeah, that's a big part. But it's not easy, right? Especially if you're caught up in pressure and you know, middle of a race as an example, and there's lots happening around you. It takes a lot of experience and knowledge and maturity to be able to let other people go or not worry about other people, and real confidence in yourself at that point.
Gosh, I really don't want to draw the parallels between that and B2B SaaS, but like any junior salespeople listening, focus on yourself and your customer, like, because that is a classic, like, start throwing shit against other people. But let's not get into that quickly.
So I was just thinking, let's caveat this episode.
Yeah, I don't really have to punch you through the
whilst listening to this, you could draw your own conclusion.
Yeah. God, yeah, let people connect the dots. So you said something at the start there about external recognition and like praise. And last time we spoke as well, you said something which really resonated with me. It was like, when people are doing this sort of thing, there's so much pressure on them to not lose, as opposed to like pressure on them to win. And I thought, especially watching the football in the summer, like watching England play, we were playing to not lose. And watching the Spanish teams play, and they were playing to win. And I think that makes a massive difference. Is there anything you can expand on that? Like the external recognition and how much that kind of like can consume an athlete?
Yeah, I think that noise is, it can be powerful, right? We can use the external in a positive way. It's a bit like how people say that, well, money is not a healthy aim or goal. And I've actually challenged that a little bit of, well, yeah, it's not just about racking up a load of bills, but it's what you do with that money, right, is the powerful thing. And that's almost the same in like, right, if that external recognition, instead of saying, no, it's bad, it's, well, what are you going to do with it? So being a home athlete, you're seeing loads of these French athletes in the Paris Olympics overperform. They're doing things they've never done. That's because they're taking 76,000 people in a stadium and using it in a positive way. Whereas what I did back in 2012, I was 20 years old, top 10 in the world, voted the most talented athlete of a generation in Britain. And I saw that as fear and what, you know, I've got so much to lose rather than so much to gain. And with 80,000 people in the stadium in the semi-final, I got to the third hurdle and I fell because I had no clarity. I was just consumed by fear and fear of failure that I can't even tell you much more than that about being there. The only things I can really remember from 2012 is that feeling of fear. So instead of using like, isn't this incredible? I've got 80,000 people behind me, millions behind me. I've got an opportunity to be great. I saw it as I've got an opportunity to get this wrong. And that completely froze me in a moment where, yeah, I had the opportunity to do something really special. Not that going to an Olympic, but being a semi-finalist is still special. But yeah, of course, that next step.
Do you think that being able to overcome that is a maturity thing? Or do you think there's a way that people who are... Do you think there's a way that we can teach that to younger people without it having to be life experience that teaches them that lesson?
Well, I think it all comes from how we've... This is a bigger now thing, right, around society and how we've built our education and how we build everything. I'm really big on competition, obviously. I love competition. It's what I did for a job. It's about who can be the best. But a lot of it was kind of like you get praise and recognition when you do well and when you win things and when other people tell you that you're great. And think about how we communicate with kids and so on. I'm a new dad, so I'm thinking about these kind of things a lot, right? How do I want to bring my daughter up? And the problem is if we are very stuck in that let's praise people and so on and so forth, that's what people seek. And that's what I was seeking. I was seeking to be loved and to be praised and to win things because that's when I felt good, because that's when people would notice me. But then I got caught up in that's what success was. And if I wasn't being loved and being praised, then I was a failure. And the thing with life is someone's always going to dislike you. Things aren't always going to go well. So if that's your measure of like, am I a good person? Am I being successful? You're always going to lose. And you're always seeking something that can be taken away very quickly rather than like, well, why do you do this? Like, what's the internal core reason? And this is the difference, right? We want to say internally, what? Why do I do this? Do I enjoy it? What is it? Is it the social part? do the opportunities or the rewards that I get allow me to do bigger, better things, or hope, you know, more holistic things for me? Yeah, I want to be financially successful, but I want to do that to have freedom and to care for my family, not to just have the cash, right? So it's what you do with those moments. So I think for too often, we kind of focus on those things that are very temporary rather than the long term. Did I ever really love running? I don't know. Now that I've retired, it's more like I go and run fast. I'm like, I love the feeling of running fast, and I love feeling strong and fit. I never had that before. It was just like, I love the feeling of winning and people telling me I'm great. And that comes and goes. Whereas actually, the feeling of just running fast could be there the whole time. But I never looked at it like that.
What are some, I was going to say, what are some like things that you now do or even did in the past to help set these like small goals now to get to these larger goals that you've set, which aren't just, let's say, in mine and Jack's world, like, or even yours now, like, just hitting target?
Yeah, and it's an interesting, so goal setting's like the same for everyone, right? And then that's what I think. When I do keynotes and I'll do various things, and people are like, yeah, but you're an Olympian. And I'm not. And I'm like, I'm just a human being who ran fast. That's the reality. Like, I'm no different to anyone else. I just ran fast. And what I did allowed me to be on a stage that just gets a bit more recognition than some other things, right? But all the mindset tricks, all the lessons I've learned working with the best coaches in the world, the same things I can use day to day. And that is, in terms of those goal setting, I'm really big on having a massive goal. Like that big, hairy, ugly, horrible goal, right? One that you're like, anyone else would laugh at you. I think that's really important because that's the thing that really excites you. So I want to be Olympic champion, for example. It's not going to happen to me anymore. I want to be Olympic champion. Now, if I just look at that massive goal, it's too far. The top of the mountain's too big. And this is where we go wrong, is we don't then reverse engineer it. Well, I want to be Olympic champion. Okay. How are you going to get there? So when I was a young athlete, that's all I did. I'm going to be Olympic champion. But I spent every single day of my life feeling like a failure, feeling like a loser, because I'm not Olympic champion yet. Even when I was winning European titles, youngest ever this and that, records, I was still like, yeah, but I'm not Olympic champion. So I'm still not what I said I was going to be. So I'm still a failure. Instead of understanding, like, to get to there, I have to have these steps that take me there. Like, I can't be Olympic champion until I've run this, until I've won that, until I've done this. And you can break it down into, well, what would an Olympic champion do today? What would an Olympic champion do every day? And like, just going along that journey breaks it up and makes it far more easy to consume rather than just looking up and going, I am a failure. I'm not there yet, which is a really high motivator in the short term. You know, like fear and being completely brutal works in the short term. But the problem is it has collateral of yourself because you burn out or you break instead of understanding like there's a journey on the way here. How am I going to tick as many boxes to make sure that I'm ready to be Olympic champion? So London 2012, when I was sixth in the world, I believed I could be Olympic champion, but I actually wasn't ready for that opportunity because I hadn't gone through enough at that point. I'd gone from 106th in the world to 16th in 1 year. And then 1 year later for London 2012, I got from 16th to sixth, next big thing. But actually, I wasn't ready for that opportunity. I hadn't been in enough races. I hadn't been consistent enough over a certain amount of years. I didn't have enough training behind me. And most importantly, I mentally couldn't handle that environment because I'd not been in it. But because I had this thing of, well, you've got to be Olympic champion, and that first opportunity to be Olympic champion was put there, I thought, well, I have to do it now. Instead of it being like, well, in 4 years' time, look at all this journey I've had before then to be ready for this moment. Or in 8 years' time, look at all these moments I've had. This would have been, technically, I would have made the last Olympics. I could have made these Olympics if I'd not retired early at 28. It would have been my fourth Olympics. Imagine how much experience and knowledge and how prepared I would be for that moment. But because I was like, well, Olympic champion, it has to happen now or it doesn't happen at all, I stopped myself doing something really great. And I think that's where we need to look at that journey and those processes and those steps of how am I going to be most prepared for the opportunity when it comes? And what do I need to do to be ready to take it when it arrives? But the one thing I do from a day-to-day basis, or try to do, like anything I talk about, I don't do it perfectly because I am a human being. I get things wrong as well, right? I have my ups and downs. But I measure myself on effort rather than results. And that is something that I learned working with the best athletes that ever lived, world record holders, Olympic champions. They were not superstars every day, but what they did every day was give everything they had. Like, they showed up every day. I worked with guys who win Olympic titles. They'd turn up one day and you'd be like, what the hell is that? Like, you are awful. And then the next day, they'd just destroy you. You'd be like, what? And it's because they just consistently were always there. And what effort does is effort understands you're a human being. Effort understands you might have certain things going on in your life. It might be you're not sleeping well, you've got financial stress, you've got whatever. You've only got 60% in the tank. So all you can give on that given day is 100% of that 60. Like, that's all I've got. That's all I can ask. And that's okay. Whereas where I burnt out and broke when I was younger, and still do at times, because I struggle with this, is I just keep going and I'm just pushing and pushing. And if we think about our reserves, like, I would go into my reserves every day because I'm demanding so much of myself. But what I'd never do is recover those reserves. So then I just get to the point where I don't even have reserves I can dip it to for when I need them. Whereas effort, so much more important. Like, that's consistency. That's where people were able to stay in the game rather than go into reserves, destroy themselves because they're demanding so much and not being aware of themselves. It's actually a little bit stupid to just be like, I'm going to give more than I've got every day. If you spend more money than you had every day, you're in trouble, right? Yet we do that every day when it comes to us physically and mentally, and then go, well, why am I now breaking, or why do I feel this way? Because you're giving more than you have to. Some days you do have to invest more than you've got, but you can't do that every day, right? So yeah, that's a big one for me. It's like, and the bottom of all my training programs, the bottom of all my kind of one-to-ones with the teams I've worked with, is like effort over results. Because also results don't come before the effort. Like, you've got to put the effort in before the results come anyway. So let's focus on that, and the results will take care of themselves. So yeah, that's a big one that I've learned and have been using for, yeah, God knows how long now.
And talk to me, when you talk about effort, how do you measure, or how do you define, or can you expand on what you mean by effort? Do you regard it as like output? Do you regard it as input? Do you regard it as like exertion, or do you regard it as sort of like tasks done? What does that mean?
So it is a really tough one because it takes a lot of awareness. So then it takes a bit of time and experience to be like, what is my percentage? Do I know where I'm at, right? But the reality is, if you ask yourself a simple question of like, did I give everything I had today? You know the answer, right? You know if you're skipping or not. Like, we can tell ourselves lies and build up these big stories, but we get found out pretty quick. And I think being able to ask that question is so important. So like, end of the day, I'm like, did I give everything I had today without completely being stupid and strong? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I did commit. So a big part is, what's the definition between, or what's the difference between turning up and showing up? Because we're all like, just turn up. But turning up is existing. Turning up is doing the bare minimum. No one thrives doing the bare minimum. No one wins doing the bare minimum. Showing up is the effort piece of like, well, I'm going to turn up today with intent. I'm going to turn up today with effort. And I think if you can confidently go, did I show up? Did I actually turn up with intent, with effort? You've probably done your job pretty well, right? You've probably done your job better than 99% of people, because most people just turn up and think it's good enough. Even great people, like, not the very, very best, but they just turn up and they think they've done their job. They haven't. The majority of people just turn up. Sod that. Like, who wants to do that? I want to win things. That's the exciting part. So I'm going to show up. So I think lots of it's honest conversations. I don't think life's not easy enough to measure. You know, I came from a sport where we get a time, so everything is measured, but it didn't measure what's happening right inside of me, in my head, or physically inside of me. That was still something that's subjective that I had to deal with. Same way with sales, right? Well, there's a number there, but that doesn't tell the full story. The bigger story is the one that you're telling yourself, or the one you can find. And I think being able to have those honest conversations with yourself and then with others as well is where we find out where we're actually at.
Jack, I could literally talk to you all day. You mentioned something else in there that you said before about like life's hard. And I'm wondering, like, because this is a journey that I guess I'm on, and I guess a lot of people are on it as well. It's like, how do we balance life's hard? You have to be okay with that, with well, how do you balance this? Life's hard. You have to be okay with that. Things are competitive. You have to be competitive in order to win or to enjoy the process of it. But also, you have to have realistic expectations, and you can't be too heavy on yourself, otherwise you won't be able to thrive. How do you manage to balance both so that one doesn't crush the other?
I try not to use the word balance anymore, because I think balance has always, for me, made me try and think of like it being even, being split, being fair. And the reality is, like, life isn't particularly fair. And nothing's really in balance. So more like harmony, right? So we talk about this in sport, of you get some maverick athletes, right? That they're out drinking, they're out messing about, they do whatever. 90% for them is life, and they're 10% about sport. And then you get coaches go, right, well, if they just focused on their sport more, they'd be great. And as soon as they do and they clean up their act, they're actually awful. They really struggle. So that's where like balance isn't a thing, right? And you get athletes who are the other way, who's like 10% of their life is the social and so on. And the 90% has to be the sport, and they can't be any different. That's okay, because we're individuals. So trying to find harmony, like, how does this work for me? Like, where am I? I was going to say priorities, but that's another thing that's wrong, because there's no such thing as priorities. There's just one priority. Like, we get that wrong a lot. So if I'm thinking about me right now, and I've got loads, you know, I'm struggling in life in certain ways at the moment, right? I'm happy to say that there's lots of things personally going on, but with being a new dad, starting a new company, and various, like, trying to look after myself, I only really have one priority. I have other things that float around it, but essentially, I've got to be a dad first. You don't have to be. Some people aren't, right? That's on them. But for me, I'm going to be a dad first. So then everything else kind of suffers a little bit. I kind of just have to accept that. Same way with this new company, I could be like, right, well, the new business is the most important thing. But then I have to accept I'm probably not going to be as present as a dad, because just can't be. So I can only have one priority in life. Same way that my physical health and various things isn't what it used to be, because it's not my main priority. Whereas when I was an athlete, that's all my job was. Like, am I physically and mentally prepared to run my very fastest? But then everything else had suffered. So I made no money in that time, because I couldn't have a job and I couldn't do various other things. So for me, it's kind of like, well, what is your main priority? And then you kind of have to accept beyond that, and accept that there needs to be harmony of the main thing is the main thing, and everything else just has to float around that. It's hard, because life can just be a bit tough, and if things just don't work out as you want them to. But I think we also need to look at that priority of like, well, what do I need to give to this? If it's in the workplace and it's like, well, actually, am I contracted to these hours? Am I making the most of these hours so that then the rest of the time can be spent on the other options and so on, rather than being a bit part of everything? Or can we schedule those times? I'm kind of going around in circles, because I think actually this is a question I can't completely answer. Just give an example of how like I'm trying to figure out like blocking out those times, so on, to be really conscious with the time that I have going into the options that I have, so that I am giving something to everything, but still keeping the priority the priority.
I've definitely found that when you've been speaking about this, one of the, like, I'm not going to say balance, but how many things I've realized as I've got older is you used to just say yes to like every social activity. And social activities generally have like large downsides of being like hungover the next day, which then impacts all of the other goals that you generally set yourself, which are beneficial. Like, all of the goals that I have, my jobs to do for the day, the things I'm working on in my work life and also in my private life are all beneficial. I don't have the job on my list which is like drain 10 pints with your mates the weekend. Do you know what I mean? So that's definitely something I've tried to work on, and really will do more so, because I feel so much more harmony-esque benefit.
So there's something on that, right? So I worked with mental conditioning coaches and talked about the illusion of choice. And it was around being able to focus, right? And it's, if you have that big goal, so we go back to that big mountain we're talking about, right? If your goal is, I want to be the top salesperson in my company, you don't have a choice if that's really what you want to do, in terms of, I can go out and drain 10 pints, or I can just go be social for a bit and come back, right? And get to bed at a certain time, so I've rested and I recovered. If you really want to be the best salesperson in your company, you kind of don't have a choice. There's an illusion of choice. You have options, But you know what the right choice is. That is, well, I don't go and drain 10 pints. But being social might be really important to you and fill your cup ready to go and be the best salesperson. So I still need to do an element of something, right? And this is where we can sometimes go wrong, where we look at everything very black and white. So we say that illusion is like, well, I can't go and do anything because I have to be completely focused on this. It's like, yeah, but for me, and this was something I had to learn after being a young athlete and then being more experienced, like, social was really important to me, being able to have those genuine connections. So it wasn't the case of I had to lock myself in a room after training and wait until the next one. It's like, no, I need to go out and do something, because the benefit of that will actually help me with the main goal as well. But I didn't drink alcohol when I was a young athlete at all, because obviously it doesn't help you run fast. But then I also realized, like, little things that science may say might not help you physically or to perform, mentally might help you more than the detriment or the decline of it. So for me, I love a whiskey, right? Love a whiskey. So me having like one small dram of whiskey a week mentally did wonders for me, because I didn't feel like I was living in a box and living like a monk and being told I couldn't or can't do things all the time. And I realized, like, one little thing isn't going to decide whether I'm going to be Olympic champion or not. Lots of little things will, but not that one. And actually being able to be human, to feel something mentally, helped me to actually run faster rather than not doing it at all. So there's a little rant for you on something, but that's what that made me think of.
No, I love that. And on the priorities thing as well, I've had a bit of like a, I've been going on a bit of a project on this recently, and I sat down and quite consciously wrote down what my priorities were. And again, going out and drinking 10 pints in the pub, funnily enough, wasn't on the fucking list. And all of a sudden, when I'm in my day to day now, it becomes much easier to make decisions. Last night, for example, finished work. It was still sunny outside. One of the boys was like, do you want to go and play 9 holes? It's like, hell yeah, I'm done for the day. Let's go. And when we were done, he was like, do you want to go and get a beer? And it was so easy for me to say no. Because I was like, I just reflected on my priorities. My priorities at the moment are work and my health. I'm really trying to get healthier, but it's a problem with my stomach. And then my relationship. We get married, Jeremy and I are investing a lot of time into that. It's really amazing. And I was like, it was really easy for me to just be like, this isn't even in my top 3, let alone in my top 10. So like, I was just like, sorry, mate, I'm off. He was like, what? And I'm thinking, it's so easy to fall into that trap. And we're using the idea of going to the pub here or whatever. But if you can create those lesser priorities, you realize there is only one or two in this instance, really, that trump everything else. And it makes all of your other decision-making processes so easy. It's actually the reason why I don't have kids yet. Because I'm like, that will be all-consuming and become my number one priority. And I've just got to get these other things right in the right position first before I can allow that to become my other priority, because I know that will become my big number one and two and three, probably, like it is for you.
So what you've done there is you've done an exercise that just brought clarity, right?
Really,
a lot of us don't have direction. We kind of just bumble through, and we know there's some things that we want to do or don't want to do, but we don't really know where we're going, which is why that having that goal or knowing why you do something, and there's a lot of talk about purpose and meaning, right? It's really important. But that just, all it really does is give you direction. And what you've done in that case is be like, well, this is a direction I want to go, so this is what I need to do. Whereas when I don't really know where I'm going, it doesn't really matter what I do to get there, because there isn't a destination. There isn't an end destination to go to, so it doesn't matter where I'm going. Whereas, yeah, if it's, well, I want to go over there, well, I know that the quickest and best way to get there is straight. Whereas if I don't know where I'm going, well, I'm just going to go on all these country lanes, and who knows, doesn't really matter, because I haven't got time to be there, or I haven't got anywhere to be. And I think that's essentially what you've done, is gone, this is where I'm going. That's all that matters. So it's very easy then to say, that's the direction I need to go. And that's definitely something I think I've struggled with post-athletics, is sports so easy, because every year you have a major championships and you just go, right, well, that's where I'm going, and that's all that matters. So it's really easy to say, nope, 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 yes, yes, yes. And it doesn't feel bad to say no, because, well, it's all about this. Post that, life's a lot harder. There's so many other things going on, that lots of little things that come in and say, well, I'm important too. And you don't know whether they are or not, because you haven't decided. So yeah, I love that example, because you've done exactly what I probably need to do now. and what I used to do as an athlete.
Yeah, not to get too Tony Robbins on it, but if you do that, you do start to just behave in a way that brings that goal closer, because you just naturally start to do the things. You're just like, well, that's obvious. You become a little bit more single-minded, a little bit more one-track-minded, I guess. And you're right, when you're an athlete, it's really interesting for you to say that. When you're an athlete, you're like, I've got to run this type, or not this. I've got to qualify, I've got to get here, I've got to train, I've got to do this to get to that thing. And when you're not, you're just like caught up in the hubble of everyday life. And it's really hard to decide on that. It's taken me, I'm 10 years into my career before I've done it. And been like, I'm going to become one track minded about this one goal that I've got. And I've got this one goal that's just written up here that I'm going to try and do. And it's like, now I've got to try and aim at that thing. Whereas I'm big on goal setting as well, but I've never done it with such a finite priority list. Is this how you do, Jack?
Not the priority list, but I really like that. It's such a cool concept. And it just like makes me think and makes me want to go through like my calendar and set things. I think something that I'm generally always been quite good at is like, day to day rather than like maybe big picture thinking. Like I've always very much like written lists, you know, down like, what do I need to do today? And I cross it off. And I was thinking, Jack, when we were talking about the effort, you know, I set these lists and I'm thinking, God, if I did all of these, that is a banging day.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Mindset wise, like I finished yesterday and I'd done 70% of them and I thought, do you know what? That's a good day. Like, well done. Like, you didn't have to do all of those things today. You could, like, mix around a little bit. So I think, and maybe I need to, I feel like I'm good at doing these things, but then I need to set these, like, big picture goals. Because I think in a lot of situations, Jack, like, my extrovertness will take away from all of these good things that I try and do. And I probably would have been like, you know what? Yeah, screw it. Let's go for beers in that scenario. And then maybe I wouldn't have done the gym, or, you know, I'd be like not in my best performance tomorrow.
It's such a British podcast, the amount we've talked about sinking pints.
Yeah. Or that, yeah, this is like one of the things that affects it the most, you know, and like me and Jack both wear Whoop bands. So like, Whoop, come at us. We would love a partnership. Like we're both of us already, you know, if you're investing in a Whoop, then you're like, trying to get fitter and improve your sleep performance and understand the things that you put in your body or the things that you do and how that affects your performance. Like, I am a massive, massive advocate of anyone wearing some form of Aura Ring or Whoop or like tracking things. I don't know, Jack, do you? Jack, agree?
So it's how you use it. So yeah,
it's if you use it.
It all depends on mindsets and personalities and so on. So like when you're talking about a to-do list there, right, if I write a to-do list and I don't get it done, it's a problem. Even if I know it's really big and horrible, there's a lot of like self-compassion kind of lists come out and be like, it's all right. Yes, you put 100 things on there, but you don't have to do 100 things. So and it's a bit like then if I'm probably one of those obsessive, intense people, right? I've got this data. I'm suddenly like, right, what do we do about it? Like, how do we, and I'll use it as a stick to beat myself with rather than a carrot to bring me forward. So I think it's how we use anything. You know, I work in professional sport now at the new company, and a lot of it's around data. And I think the important thing to really lean into is like data starts conversations. Like that should be the key thing. It's just awareness, insight, conversations to then decide how you want to change rather than something to just destroy you with and just say, like I did when I was that young athlete, just going, you're not good enough because these numbers don't say it. Instead of it being like, well, this is where I'm at and this is what I want to do to be able to change that. So yeah, I'm a big advocate as long as it's used in the right way. Whereas, yeah, most sporting environments will use it as a stick to beat you with rather than one to just build awareness to help educate us, to help us become better.
And like, just to kind of, as we kind of come to the end, I've been, as I'm sure you all are, engrossed by the Olympics. And one thing that's really struck me this time around is how much the athletes are coming out, in especially the younger athletes, are coming out at the end of it saying, like, we did everything we could, or I did everything good. This was a great experience. I'm really glad this is a really good learning experience. I don't know if you guys watched the BMX racing. I can't remember her name. Is it Jade?
Beth Schreiber.
Beth Schreiber has it. She lost the final, even though she's badass and she should have won it. And she just, they come on to it and how do you feel? She just said, my family's healthy, I'm healthy, I've had a great time, this has been a great experience, I'm really happy to be here, and then kind of walked off. And I just think between now and like the first few Olympics that I really got into, this real difference between how much like that is eating the athletes, it probably is, but there's so much more reflection I'm noticing. So, and I feel like Jack, you're probably a big reason for that, and the work you've done. But are you noticing a big difference in how much more reflective, especially the young athletes, are being in perhaps the face of like not getting a gold medal?
So there's so much to unpack here. So this is the first Olympics I've not been involved in some capacity since 2012. Obviously, I competed in 2012 and 2016. I then coached an athlete to the Olympic final in Tokyo with the Italian team, and now I'm just spectating, right, and enjoying it. This is the first Olympics that I think it's really conscious. People are very conscious of these conversations, and seeing these interviews actually a very commonplace of around yourself, around the bigger picture. And I think this is one athlete. I went public 11 years ago about being diagnosed with mental health issues and really struggling. And at the time, I got destroyed for it, quite frankly, and it really damaged my sporting career. But we're now seeing that happen a lot more, and people have conversations. So hopefully that was part, I'm not the first person, but hopefully I'm a part of that changing. Society has improved. There's so much more awareness around mental health and well-being through campaigns and so on. Our education's still a little bit far behind in terms of people actually understanding what that means. But I think people accept it's there. So that's a start. Mental conditioning coaches and psychologists are becoming commonplace now within sport. And that's only happened in the last 5 years plus. COVID has then accelerated everyone's awareness of their health and well-being. So we saw with Wellbeing Tech, which is what I was working in at the time, it was a damn sight easier to sell during COVID than it is now. I can tell you that, right? So we're just seeing this real change. And I think young people as well, the people who get called snowflakes and so on, and these new generations coming through, they're not snowflakes, they're just different. And that's okay. But young people have so much more awareness and education, and then higher expectations of a duty of care, their health and their well-being, than anyone before them. So we're just seeing this big change all come at once. And actually, we're going to get a really messy time, I think, both in sport and in business, of these young people coming through and saying, we're all seeing it, but saying, do you know what? Life, my expectations of life are a little bit different. Like, I don't live to work, I work to live, and I expect this and that. And I'm not as much fussed about finances as I am about having flexible working, working from home, whatever it might be. And what we're going to get is a real butt head shortly of both in sport and business, of these older generations still in the workplace because they're staying in longer as well, having to manage these people who are completely different to them. And we're going to see a butt heads, and then we're going to see a big change where the leaders who can be very individual and understand the well-being side of things will start to thrive. And that doesn't, the reason why I've done well in workplace well-being is because I'm not soft well-being person. I'm this, as hopefully you've heard, well-being is foundation of high performance. Being a human being happens all day, every day. Being an employer, an athlete happens for a part of it. Why wouldn't we focus on the bigger picture? But the main thing is I look after myself so I can perform. I look after other people, not only because it's nice to do and because there is a duty of care just to look after people, but because I want them to go and run fast or to go and close deals or to just keep winning. I don't just do it for the sake of it. Sod that. Like, you do it for a reason. And the reason why we look after people and we focus on their well-being and we make sure their environments are safe and they can thrive is so we can win more. And I think that hasn't happened in well-being until probably recently. And yeah, I think that's the big change that we're seeing, is people understanding the bigger picture and the full story, which is what, yeah, I do as a business now in sport, right? Is let's give insight to what happens outside of sport, because it affects performance so much. You can't leave it at the door.
I love that. Thank you, Jack. Yeah,
I told you there was a lot to unpack.
It's like well-being with a real like pragmatic purpose. Thank you, mate.
So there you have it, folks. Jack Green proving once again that being an Olympian is actually no big deal. But honestly, if you're not walking away with actionable insights, you might want to rewind and listen to that again. Remember, Jack's top tips are focusing on effort over results, setting big goals but breaking them down into manageable steps, and prioritizing your well-being as a foundation for high performance. whether you're an athlete, salesperson, or just trying to win at life, I found those nuggets were pure gold, and hopefully you did too. Thanks for listening, and catch you on the next episode.